everybody, Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks, Tom engineering and producing the show. And Tom, I am ready for now 100 degrees to be gone.
Well, next week, probably Sunday.
After the big dust storm over the weekend.
I think it's all going to be in our rearview mirror.
Good.
But we've said that in the past, haven't we?
The big winds and dust, I guess.
Saturday, we're looking forward to gusting to 39 miles an hour, or so that'd be in the afternoon Saturday.
That will hearken the change in our seasons. And boy, am I ready.
There you go.
Thursday, September 28th, 2023. It's the Buckmaster Show in the Zocalo Village Green Things Studio. The radio station's 1030 KVOI live local news talk. Worldwide live listening at buckmastershow.com, not only to listen to the program live, but if you miss the program, all of the podcasts over the past 12 and a half years are available there. Our live line for telephone interviews, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. For his monthly visit, just about every month, every 4 or 5 weeks, we bring in Dr. Gabriel Trujillo, superintendent of the Tucson Unified School District. Dr. Trujillo, thanks for coming in. How are you?
I'm doing very well, Bill. And I join you in just being so excited that summer is coming to an end. It has been one of the
worst summer of my life, and people know why, for obvious reasons. Losing my wife of 51 years, and then I haven't talked about it on the air, but to compound things, our cat died. Tom, I hadn't told you about that. The cat died on Wednesday. We had to put the cat down because the cat was very sick. And I think the cat just died of a broken heart and wanted to be with Ann. And Prissy the glam cat is with Ann now. So that's the good news. All right, Dr. Trujillo, in the news, the situation at Tucson High Magnet School. There was an incident September 13th on campus. Multiple fights broke out. Why don't you take it from there?
Yeah. And it's just one of those unfortunate incidents we had on September 13th. We had six students. Students that were out in the community engaged in a conflict that boiled over and spilled over onto Tucson High. And it was a conflict that was agitated greatly by social media. And these six individuals taking to social media, egging their respective friends on. Things in the community often do spill over into our high schools, and that presents a challenge in and of itself. But then when you have social media and kids posting, tweeting, using Snapchat, using text messages to incite each other, we don't even have the opportunity to see what's coming. Now, that being said, we had a series of three fights break out on September 13th during the lunch period.
Outside
at lunch during the lunch period. Three separate fights involving these six students. And the situation I know that was reported was that there were weapons involved.
Yeah,
there were absolutely no weapons involved.
Yeah.
There was an initial reporting that maybe one student might have had a firearm. We located that student, searched that student. There was no firearm involved. With that being said, when you have a campus of 3,000 students and you have three lunch periods, and each lunch period you're dealing with about 1,000 students outside, the chaotic nature of having three fights break out and hundreds of students not know what's going on and the staff not know what's going on, and because of the reporting of a potential firearm, you have the requirement to notify TPD. And then you layer in the Tucson Police Department having to come on and do their job. I don't fault them one bit.
No.
They did their job. They responded. They responded quickly, which I commend them for. But what we could have done better was, number one, communicate and have better communication with the teachers of Tucson High from the administration. That didn't happen, and created a very chaotic situation. And that's something we have to own and train and make sure that our teachers and our staff on the campus are better trained, better equipped, and more confident to handle a lockdown situation during lunch. Now,
it's dangerous for the teachers or the employees to try to step in the middle of one of the, try to break this thing up.
It is. It's dangerous to do that. And yeah. I commend our monitors who performed heroically. Our monitors eventually got control of the situation and separated kids.
Yeah.
The challenge was with a lockdown being called during what I call an open period of the day. Open period meaning those times of the school day where students are in an unstructured environment. That's lunchtime. That's the passing period where they're moving from one class to another. It's release time when the final bell rings and kids make their way out to parking lots or bus stops. It's before school when kids are arriving. And when you have emergency situations happen during these free periods...
Boy, that can be chaotic.
It can be chaotic. And we saw that we didn't rehearse that to the extent that we needed to make our teachers feel safe and in command of the situation. We've got to do that better. We also have to own the fact that there wasn't the best communication between the school's administration and the Tucson Police Department. The Tucson Police Department is doing their job. They're sweeping campuses looking for a student who may or may not have had a firearm, and they need time to do that. Our administration there on site prematurely called an end to the lockdown, and that created a lot of confusion with teachers who thought it was safe to let the students back outside for lunch. But it wasn't safe because the Tucson Police Department was still sweeping hallways. Wow. We have got to find a way to do that better.
So this is a big-time learning lesson for
you and
the team.
It's a big-time learning lesson. Yes. But I will say that on a campus of 3,100 students with
That's
over 250 staff members,
yeah.
there's a lot of moving parts.
Yeah.
And it's a continuous improvement process. And we do take seriously the challenges of that day and are committed to moving forward.
So what about this suit against social media companies? How does something like that play into this incident?
Well, recently the governing board did authorize the Tucson Unified School District to join a class action lawsuit against the social media giants. And it's for reasons like this. It is the pervasiveness of the platform that allows for students to engage in online harassment and bullying. It's the contribution to the deteriorating state of mental and behavioral health of teenagers that are now body shaming each other, that are now more susceptible to depression and more susceptible to online bullying and harassment. And the third connection is what we just talked about. The connection between the pervasiveness of social media and incidents of real violence presenting itself as a threat to student health and safety on our campuses. We saw this on September 13th, that you take away those social media platforms, igniting the conflict born in the community. Would we have had that kind of a fight? I don't think we would have.
No.
Because
probably not.
We probably wouldn't have.
No.
You know, so.
This is really, the social media has escalated the situation.
It has.
And there's even an incident down in Sahorita. They're reporting two juveniles have been arrested in connection with an online threat. So it's pervasive. And this is a class action suit that's being filed, right? Yeah.
This is a class action suit. And we really do believe that we have a lot of strong evidence going back several years. We keep meticulous records on student disciplinary situations, especially when they involve violence, fights, threats, harassment. We have very detailed narratives about the specific situations that originated on social media. And if we go into litigation, we are ready to present all that information to talk about the connection between the availability and the pervasiveness of social media and conflict that actually materializes into violence. And then we can draw a connection to just how much lost instructional time results from that because students are now out on suspensions.
So this will be moved. This is a very important topic, obviously. So there's going to be a lot going on internally at Tucson Unified with the staff and the team at Tucson High.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. We'll be certainly very much engaged in getting ready for this.
Let's take a break right here. We have Dr. Gabriel Trujillo with us, superintendent at Tucson Unified. Right now, I want to talk about a little happier subject, Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. Do you need some comfort food? Well, who doesn't these days? Mona's northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Their website's monasdanishbakery.com. Open for lunch. We don't talk enough about lunch. They have a great lunch menu as well. We talk so much about the breakfast. That's kind of the signature. When they open at 6:30, people are ready. They're ready for their Danish. They're ready for the coffee. They're ready for a beautiful breakfast. Check it out, Mona's Danish Bakery. More with Dr. Gabriel Trujillo as we continue on a Thursday on the Buckmaster Show. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan as early as 2023 for public review. Learn more about the process at rtanext.com.
Essential Pest Control leaves bugs belly up.
With science.
You mean you don't use a shoe?
No, we use the latest in technology and innovation to eliminate termites, bugs, weeds, especially now during termite season.
No spray cans and lighters?
Nope, only termite solutions that target insect biology, using chemistry to help protect the environment, people, and their pets.
Huh, Essential Pest Control leaves bugs belly up. Call 886-3029 or visit essentialpest.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show on the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio, our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Dr. Gabriel Trujillo is with us. He's been articulating that incident over at Tucson High on September 13th. And before we move on to another topic, this incident did reveal that some things were not working, some infrastructure things were not working. Probably another reason why you are going out for a bond. A bond election.
Absolutely. You know, Tucson High is one of our oldest campuses. And in response to a letter we received by concerned employees, you know, we see that the intercom was down in a lot of different places around the campus.
Wow.
And a campus like Tucson High, you need a fully modernized intercom.
With 3,000 students.
With 3,000 students so that every single employee knows what's going on. And that presented a real danger that day, that there was actual dead spots on the campus that our employees, our teachers didn't know what was going on. They were not being informed. Obviously, we're taking some immediate actions to get that taken care of. That's not going to be cheap. We had cameras that weren't fully functioning in all operations of the campus. We rely on those cameras. when we do investigations, when we try to go back and review which students were involved, we have to move in and do an immediate repair. None of this is going to be cheap. This ties back to the need for capital funding to make sure that these vital systems that we need to keep students and employees safe are functioning efficiently and effectively at all times.
Talk a little bit about, for folks who haven't heard, about what will be on the ballot, Dr. Trujillo.
Well, what's coming up in November is a bond package. We're going to be asking the voters to support a bond package that targets safety and security infrastructure and the modernization of our facilities. Since the year 2012, we've seen a $160 million loss in funding that would have been available to take care of things like cameras and intercom systems, fencing and gating to make our schools safer, modernization of facilities, replacing dilapidated heating and cooling systems, replacing cracked flooring, parking lots. So we're asking the voters for $480 million over 30 years to really get this thing done. It's going to mean an additional 65 cents for every $100 of assessed evaluation. And what that's going to mean, the average $200,000 homeowner will see $142 additionally a year. And for that, we will be able to fully modernize our facilities and invest in the safety and security infrastructure that, if it would have been in place that day at Tucson High, probably would have made this situation a lot less dangerous and a lot less chaotic.
Let's go to caller Gil calling us on our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Gil, you're with Dr. Trujillo. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's always a great show, Bill. Dr. Trujillo, you said social media played a very important part in escalating this incident that took place at Tucson High. That wouldn't have taken place if people didn't have cell phones. Is there any push to get cell phones out of the school?
Okay, it's a pretty good question.
I love that. I'm all for cell phones. I'm all for dress codes. I'm all for uniforms. And unfortunately, cell phones are a thorny issue in the TUSD community. We have a significantly large segment of our parents that would go to battle with us on that and believe that cell phones are necessary for them to have instant. But then we also have parents like Gil that would also come to bat for us and say, hey, listen, we want to make school safe. Social media is a problem. Cell phones are a problem. I happen to share Gil's opinion. I believe that if you have a real actual emergency, you can use the old school hardwired telephone in the front office to call your parents.
Right.
And unfortunately, with an issue like this, that's a 50-50, it puts our board members in a tough spot. So I don't think it's an issue that's going to be taken on anytime soon.
Many districts, as you know, are saying you check the cell phones now go in your locker at the beginning of the school day. And the social media, that's all checked at the door.
We're looking at a couple of...
It's a trend that's
happening.
It's
a trend. Yeah. We're asking some questions. We have some inquiries out about cell phone signal blockers when you walk into a building that you can't do anything other than make an old school phone call. You can't access internet. So we are looking at a couple of different alternatives.
What's the latest with Superintendent of Schools Tom Horn and his... Well, you explain it. It's a situation that puts TUSD at odds with the superintendent again.
Yeah, and we're no stranger to Superintendent Horn.
No.
But at this point, we believe that we know that we are following the law. The most recent legal opinion from Attorney General Mays is only the State Board of Education has the authority to change how English language learners receive English language instruction. Second language students that are coming in English is not their first language. Secondly, only the State Board of Education has the authority to change the requirements for parents who want their kids to participate in bilingual education. It's not Tom Horn. And the crux of Tom Horn's lawsuit is that he believes that the state superintendent instruction has that authority. Now, TUSD is following a State Board of Education approved model for English language learners studying English as a second language. And that model allows them to participate in dual language programs, in this case, Spanish. Superintendent Horn doesn't like that. Well, we say if he doesn't like it, he needs to be victorious in his lawsuit. If he is victorious in his lawsuit, we'll have a different conversation. But at this moment, the State Board of Ed has issued guidelines that we follow, and we are following their guidance at this point, and we're following the law. But he certainly has a right to file a lawsuit. He's filed that lawsuit. And if a judge finds in his favor, we'll have a different conversation. But at this point, it's business as usual here in TUSD for the wonderful two-way dual language programs that we offer and the service to language English as a second language students that we also offer.
So what this lawsuit has been filed, right?
I think it has, yeah. Or he stated his intention to file it.
Okay, so we'll see how this progresses.
And he essentially is challenging Attorney General May's formal opinion that he doesn't have a right to withhold funds from, in this case, the Creighton Elementary School District because they're violating the English-only law of 2000 Proposition 203. The State Board of Education has chimed in and said, we have approved two-way dual language or bilingual education models that are compliant with Proposition 203 because they're opt-in for parents. Parents choose the model. And we are compliant because we, the State Board of Education, we have approved models that allow for English as a second language students to participate in these programs if they are of a certain level, in this case, intermediate. The superintendent for public instruction has come in and said, I have that authority. You don't. I believe that it is a violation of English only, whether or not parents are opting in, it's English only. There shouldn't be an opt-in. And that's where he's going to court.
All right. Other than the highly publicized incident on the 13th at Tucson High, how is the school year going so far?
The school year is going great. But in the world of public opinion, we always know that it only takes one incident, to really set the whole district back. So you have six students involved in a fight, and you have 39,994 other kids that are doing great things. So we're off to a really, really good start. We're looking forward to school letter grades being public coming up less than a month. I think you're going to see some dramatic increases in letter grades for a lot of TUSD schools. The public's going to be happy. We're really, really happy with our expansion of early childhood ed. We've expanded another eight classrooms of preschool availability for students. We're very, very happy about that. That's going to be a big win for our parents that otherwise wouldn't have had access to preschool. And we finished a comprehensive renovations of restroom facilities at six of our largest schools. That's a big victory. We're getting ready to break ground on a brand new classroom building over at Borman K-8 that's over there on the base. It's our only Department of Defense.
It's on Davis-Monthan.
It's on Davis-Monthan. And a lot of people don't know. We operate a campus.
I did not know that.
We operate a campus in partnership with the Department of Defense there on Davis-Monthan.
These are Air Force kids then.
These are Air Force kids.
Wow.
Absolutely.
All right. And getting the kids, Tom's an Air Force kid on the other side of the glass many years ago. And he knows about being schooled on an Air Force base. All right. And getting the kids to school, transportation has improved dramatically.
It has. We're closer than ever to our goal of 200 drivers at 174. Our parents are now starting to see those bus stops come back. Those bus stops that were down the street that disappeared because we didn't have the drivers, and then they had to go drive their kid to some far-off transportation hub, they're starting to see those bus stops come back, and they're happy again.
And the driver shortage has now been alleviated.
We've got a good handle on it. We're very, very close. I think I could say that we've got a handle on it, and I think having them clock in at 18.25 an hour and being the highest paid bus drivers in the county helps.
Are you okay on other service personnel as well, or are there openings?
We have a lot of openings. Come join our food services team. We could always use wonderful people that would love to work for students in our wonderful cafeterias. We're seeing a shortage. We also need folks that want to come work in our before and after school programs. If you love kids, you have a heart for kids, and you want to spend some time with them, but you don't necessarily want to be around them all day for 8 hours, we've got some great part-time work available if you want to come in and help us out with our before and after school programs.
Where would you find out more about these openings?
TUSD1.org. Go to our website, and it is a prominent link, Work for TUSD, right on our main website, to find out more.
All right. Coming up next, Adelita Grijalva. She knows a little bit about the Tucson Unified School
Just
District.
Just a little bit.
Just a little bit. I think Adelita served 20 years on the board. Is that about right?
Longest serving board member in the last half century. Absolutely.
Wow.
So she is well-versed in all things TUSD.
All right. She's well-versed in all things Pima County because she is the chairwoman of the Pima County Board of Supervisors. She's next on The Buckmaster Show. Be right back.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana. Plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com. For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Thinking about a river cruise? Let Bon Voyage Travel guide you to choose the perfect cruise to complement your vacation dreams. River cruising has become more popular than ever, and we know you have so many options to consider when selecting the destination, cruise line, and ship. At Bon Voyage Travel, we provide a comprehensive presentation on the top tips for river cruises and have a team of specialists to assist you. Visit bvtravel.com and view our River Cruise 101 presentation today.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show and the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Perfect time of year to get over to Green Things, especially with the cooler weather supposed to start after the big wind and dust on Saturday, which will herald the new season, at least we're hoping so, where we will actually start to get some rather cool mornings. So the plants, this is a perfect time to put some fall color in your garden. 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. Green Things in their 53rd year of business. GreenThingsAZ.com and their sister business, ZocaloVillage.com, for all that great Talavera pottery. Beautiful items that they have there, some handcrafted dining room sets out of some beautiful woods, like locally, mesquite wood. Anyway, check out Green Things. Let's welcome Adelita Grijalva now to the Buckmaster Show. She is the chair, I almost said the president, of the Tucson Unified School District. No, because we just had this very good conversation with Dr. Trujillo. Adelita Grijalva served, I think Dr. Trujillo told me, 20 years?
20 years.
Three different times as the board president.
Yes, for more than, sometimes for more than one.
Wow, wow. Do you miss it?
I do. I miss the people. I miss the celebrations at the meetings and celebrating our students and our amazing staff. I do miss that. And I, fortunately for me, I get to go and visit a lot of schools because many TUSD schools are also in District 5. So I do get to visit.
Well, you're on board with the bond. We talked a little bit about this bond, and Dr. Trujillo shared with us that there were some infrastructure issues that really that failed on the day of that incident, September 13th, over at Tucson High, that would have kind of not would have mitigated the situation. It might have would have helped the situation because the public. The intercom was not working properly as well. So, I mean, these are things that infrastructure-wise need to be taken care of, and the bond can go a long way in helping with that.
Absolutely. And I have my son is at Tucson High, so I heard about at least what he saw and his impressions. And there were some failures there that I think are just exclusively because when you don't have the funds, you direct them as much as you can into the classroom and less to the facility. And so this bond is actually going to address many of those issues that involve a lot of security and access for our students. And so I'm completely in favor of the bond.
So let's talk about Pima County business. The board seemed to be divided over this sex assault case at the sheriff's department. What can you tell us about that?
Well, because we discussed it in executive session, I'm always really careful of what I can't say. Mm-hmm. But in a nutshell, our sheriff, and I agree, that there is a criminal case happening right now, and he doesn't want anything to interrupt that process.
He's handling an internal review of his agency's handling of an alleged sexual assault of a deputy by a colleague at a holiday party last year.
Right. But he is holding off on some, which is what the argument is about. So I understand the timing of it. I understand my colleagues that voted for. I just felt based on legal advice that I just don't want to be in a position to do anything to hurt the prosecution's case.
The sheriff has also said that he will not be staffing your board meetings. What's that all about?
That changed just this week.
It did change. Well, tell us about
it. Yes, I think initially he sent an email, which I think was, well, sort of publicized that he wasn't going to have his staff there. And then just this week sent me another email saying upon consideration and discussion with our county administrator, they're going to go ahead and put one person there, which I think is really critical for the safety of those meetings. And he's concerned about the political environment that his staff is in. And he made a reference in the letter to a supervisor sort of trying to undermine his authority. I don't know any specifics about that. I'm just happy that we're going to have a deputy there.
You need a deputy there.
I agree.
I mean, don't you?
We do. We do. Everyone, we do have like the hired sort of vet set kind of help.
Yeah, yeah.
But they can't arrest they can be individually sued. They don't have the kind of coverage that one of our deputies would have. And so I do think it's really critical to have somebody there. And I think that was unanimous. Community members that came up were concerned that we weren't going to have, you know, any kind of law enforcement present there. So we will.
How are we doing at the meetings as far as the call to audience, which is, let's put it mildly, has had a troubled past? Yeah.
I do think it's better. Sometimes if we have more than 20 speakers, once we hit 20, you go from 3 minutes to 2 minutes. So there's a little bit of a kerfuffle about that. People are opposed to that. But we're getting through. Everybody that comes has been able to speak at the call to the audience. People are getting... addressing issues that are actually on our agenda, which I appreciate, whether I agree with your position or not. I do think I want to hear from the community. And while we do have an occasional person that crosses the line, overwhelmingly, it's been a lot better. And everyone that's come into the meeting has been able and signed up to speak has been able to speak. So we haven't cut anyone off. And thus far, we've been staying at about an hour or a call to the audience.
And is that less than it used to be?
It at one time was 3 hours. So yes, that's significantly less. And we know hearings are different. You know, if you have a development and people are opposed, that's a whole different process than call to the audience. But I think that it's been going well, much better.
Where are we right now financially in Pima County? Are we still getting any Fed money from the COVID days, or is that pretty much gone away?
No, we are. We're receiving federal dollars specifically. I can just speak to the one issue that's come up recently, the services for asylum seekers.
Yes.
That going through Casa Alitas. We just received $1 million from Secretary Mayorkas. For that, I mean, it sounds amazing and we're appreciative, but if you look at the number of people coming through and the cost per person.
That million doesn't go a long way, does it?
It's about 11 days.
11 days.
It's about 11 days. So thus far, we have a, you know, Border Counties Coalition, Cochise County, Santa Cruz, everyone's sort of pulling their money together. City of Tucson is also, and we've successfully managed $36 million in federal funding. But if you look at since September of 2022, we've had about 10,000 people per month, unique individuals coming, arriving. So Tucson is not their final destination. So we're arranging travel and doing that kind of thing. But it is since 2019, when the doors first opened with Casa Alitas, it's 255,000 individuals. Mm. And so many of
Thank goodness they're doing this kind of work there.
A lot of people have an issue with it, but the people that come and voice a concern. And
what is their issue? What are they
just
saying?
That, you know, they want the funding to be going to U.S. citizens and not asylum seekers, and have some other disparaging anti-immigrant sort of rhetoric that is going with some of those comments. But what we're trying to do is keep our community safe. We have health screenings, we have services, we're arranging transportation. And so Tucson is not anyone's final destination that is coming across the border. They're not staying in our community, and we're just helping to facilitate that process so they get to where they're going with their sponsor.
And at least we haven't had street releases that Douglas has had, and I think Nogales had some, and there was one other place, Bisbee, had some.
Yeah, Cochise and Santa Cruz counties have both had street releases. And we had a meeting, and it's really not a if it's going to happen. It's a when it's going to happen. If the amount of people coming on a daily basis continues to exceed the capacity, we've been at about 172% capacity. So it's been fairly Herculean efforts by this coalition that has been able to stave off those street releases.
Are the numbers stabilized?
They're increasing.
They're increasing.
Mm-hmm. They're increasing.
How many people can we accommodate?
That's sort of the hard number, right?
Is that kind of a number that's kind of all over the place?
For example, you have, let's say, a busload of people that are going directly towards the airport.
Okay.
They don't stop in Casalitas. They don't get services there. They're moving straight on. You have some people that have already made their own personal arrangements. They don't need the services of Casalitas. And then you have some that have medical issues They've tested positive for, you know, some sort of flu strain, something like that. So we have to make sure to isolate them for the health of all of our community and
or
for
COVID,
those individuals.
Right?
Correct.
All, yeah.
COVID is still coming up, but it's not as often as some of the other issues. And then, you know, some people, the travel arrangements are a little harder. Maybe they don't have all the documentation necessary to get on a flight. So we're having to ask for duplicates of things. And so sometimes those stays take, you know, 3 or 4 days versus several hours. Mm-hmm. So that's why the capacity fluctuates a little bit. But we're way over capacity.
Yeah. All right. Let's take a break right here. More with Pima County Board Chair Adelita Grijalva. We'll take a break. It's Buckmaster on a Thursday. Be right back.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA tax is collected throughout Pima County and averages about $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation projects in the region. The RTA tax funds priority projects that were approved by voters in 2006. See details in the latest RTA annual report at rtamobility.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in Southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in Southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, one of our great sponsors. Boy, I like this forecast that Tom just put up on my screen over in Silver City. 80 degrees, 80, 81 degrees. And next week, it's going to be a little cooler here, but over there, upper 40s. 46 one day for the low on Monday. So that's put on a sweater and do some hiking in the Gila National Wilderness. It's only about a three-hour drive from Tucson. Start your planning now by visiting their great website, southwestnewmexico.org. Some very tempting recreation ideas there. Also great places to stay, and they've got some pretty good restaurants, too, as well, over in Silver City. We continue now with Adelita Grijalva, the chairwoman of the Pima County Board of Supervisors. So that we had heard about this battery factory that is coming to Tucson. Do you have any updates on that?
We do. We're having a groundbreaking the end of October. That was delayed a little bit because they're, you know, they need to get permits and other things that have to happen. But we're excited because it's supposed to be an opportunity for us to, here in the U.S., have a greener process in order to get the batteries that we all need for these amazing little devices that we carry around.
Yeah, and that will hire, they'll be hiring some people out there too. I think they're going to, at one point they said up to 1,000 people.
Yes, once they're fully operational, that was the goal.
Has the board taken a position on Vail being incorporated? This has gone to the voters before in Vail, but on November 7th, they'll be deciding whether or not to become a town.
Right. The Board of Supervisors voted unanimously to let the town of Vail make that decision. So really, our piece of that vote was more administrative. Like, did they get the signatures that they need in order to get on the ballot? And once that was verified by our county recorder, then it's put on the ballot, and then the voters get to decide. And this next Tuesday, we're voting on a process by which to immediately appoint a town council if the voters in Vail incorporate.
Really?
So that's our role. We're just, it's sort of like a little temporary process in order for the voters to be able to make that decision for themselves on who would be their elected representatives.
Are there pros or cons to, as far as the county is concerned?
No, Pima County, no. For individual property owners, what we've heard is that, you know, they moved out to that area for that rural lifestyle and they don't want another, a town council or anything sort of regulating that kind of rural environment. And it really will be up to the voters to decide.
All right, what about this new jail? There was a blue ribbon panel that was appointed. They've been looking at whether or not we need a new Pima County jail. Do you have any updates on that?
Well, once that report is completed, it's supposed to come back to the Board of Supervisors for us to be able to make a decision. I have publicly stated several times that I'm not in favor of putting $400 million into a new jail.
And just, yeah.
No.
How about just upgrading the current one?
Well, and, you know, one of the concerns is, are there structural issues? We haven't had that information. But when I did the tour, and I appreciated the tour from the leadership there at the jail, including Sheriff Nanos, it looked like a lot of deferred maintenance. And that is not solely on the shoulders of Sheriff Nanos. You know, there's an administrative process there, including how did the county support or not support that? But I've had the opportunity to walk through schools that are 100 years old. And so, you know, when a portion of the jail is 16, that's basically brand new. It shouldn't look the way it looks. And so I'm not in favor of moving forward with that. But we haven't had the report yet. So when it comes, it'll be public, obviously.
So when someone is released from the jail, are there services now that are available right there?
There are. It's the transition center with Pima County, and it's literally,
rather than just here's a brown paper bag with your belongings.
Right. So what's happening now is there's still a process when someone is released to remind them, here's your follow-up court date, or this is, you know, it's usually not just a release, and there aren't other things in the justice system that you have to address. And so we have what's called navigators that are there to speak to every individual person that's being released to ask them if they need services. And what kind of services do they need? Do you need counseling, housing, medical? I mean, how can we provide support to stop that revolving door of arrests? And, you know, they've had really good success in who they've been able to, they've been able to touch everyone, and the percentage is 56% of those individuals are seeking additional help, which is great. And those are people that wouldn't have that service otherwise. This is something that we thought was very important for Pima County. And also being the supervisor that represents that area, the community members were screaming for some support because releases happen 24/7. And all of a sudden, there'd be a group of people kind of walking through someone's neighborhood, or, you know, landing in someone's backyard. And so
just got out.
Right. And I don't have anywhere to go.
Yes.
Don't have any resources to get where I need to go. So I think that it's been really positive. And we just ramped up. They just had their grand opening about a month ago. So considering that, they've been able to speak to 3 weeks ago, we had an update that was 212 people. So it's not a huge number, But I think that considering what we're trying to do here, the statistics are really good and I'm really promising.
People looking for a job, you still have quite a few openings in Pima County. And I know you did, Jan Lesher has been very involved with that kind of that, the pay grade and yes. looking at salaries. And I think Jan was saying some of that the last time this really had a thorough look was like 1950s.
Yes, 1957. Yeah. And, you know, I think that that's one of the things that I've been able to bring from my previous board participation to this in looking into Pima County from TUSD is looking at how we're treating our employees and how we're compensating them. Because historically, you know, if you got a job with the city or the county, you were set for life.
Yeah.
And we're not, we need to change how we attract people, the kind of benefits that we offer and the kind of opportunities that people have once in the county to advance. And what we've been able to see is we haven't kept up with compensation. And so some people saw a really huge bump. And my impression is we've dedicated about $20 million to phase one and two, and we're going to need to dedicate another 30 in order to make sure that everyone is sort of, any compression issues are addressed. But, you know, this board will need to make that commitment, and I'm hoping that we will.
Younger people now don't look at a job for life. They Correct. Look at a job, what it can offer for the immediate future, and they're not necessarily thinking about a pension or retirement.
Right.
Yeah.
And I, you know, having a staff of, you know, three people under 30, I think it's important that, you know, I pick their brains all the time. Like, what are you looking for? And how can we be more responsive? Because, you know, this idea that once you get a job at the county, it doesn't matter the kind of job you have, you're just happy to have one, is clearly not the case. So we have to do more. And I think that I'm glad our county administrator and the majority of our board are willing to move forward with that. This class in compensation really only passed 3-2. So I think it's important that we continue to move forward.
Okay, and of course, we didn't have a chance to talk about RTA or transportation, but you're hoping RTA moves forward.
I am, and I'm also hoping that we have more funds dedicated to the areas in towns and not just unincorporated and rural, because those arterial roads need a lot of support.
Yes, in particular, if anyone's listening, River Road. River Road from Swan over to like the JCC, that is a patch of road that I will try to drive away from to avoid it at any cost. But anyway, yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, Adelita Grijalva, thank you very much. Have a great rest of the day.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
All right, on behalf of the chairwoman and Tom, engineering and producing the show, Bill Buckmaster, wishing everybody well.